And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with hosts T. Ramon and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalist Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sko. I'm your host, Tim Turner, along with host Roscoe Nance, and we hope to have here an hour of a scintillating conversation on a variety of sports, as it's that time of year when everybody's playing just about. Bowl season's well underway. It started over the weekend here in Atlanta with the Celebration Bowl, where North Carolina A&T knocked off Alcorn in really what was a very exciting ball game. We're going to talk about that tonight. Some of the bowl games, some of the things that happened in the NBA, NFL. You see where the Raiders are looking for a quarterback, and they signed not Colin Kaepernick. They found another person, another retread, and those type of stories will be coming along tonight. But also we'll have with us a former NBA, longtime NBA player, Jason Terry, slated to be our guest tonight. We're coming up here on Christmas time. We'll be less than a week away, and really, Christmas is when the NBA starts really becoming interesting for a lot of folks. So we look like we're going to have a pretty good show tonight. How are you doing, Roscoe?
Oh, I'm doing great. Just getting in the spirit of the season, dreaming of a white Christmas. The Steelers won, and the Golden Tigers didn't lose, so things are great. Golden Tigers didn't play, of course, but hey, you take it where you find it.
That's still helpful. So like I said, all the bowls kicked off this weekend. The first one to kick off was the Celebration Bowl at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, where it looked like, man, Alcorn could have pulled it out there toward the end there, but they got close, and then they gave up a kickoff immediately after pulling close to A&T, and really they never recovered. And also with having the quarterback injured. So it still was an exciting game. It was one worthy of being a national broadcast. So what is your take on it?
Well, you know, it was an outstanding game, a very competitive game and a well-played game. And, you know, you talk about Alcorn having an opportunity, you know, seemed like they were right there. But that's the thing about A&T all season long. I mean, they have a team full of playmakers, and they made a play. You know, have playmakers all over the field, offense, defense, special teams, and you know, playmakers make plays, and Malik Wilson, you know, made a play. He returned 4 kickoffs for touchdowns this season, including that one? So,
right.
You know, you just had the feeling that, you know, something was going to happen, either a special teams, a defensive score, or offensive. But the kid, Deshaun Wower, from Alcorn, really showed his wares. You know, the thing that you don't do to A&T is run the ball, and he ran the ball extremely well. So, you know, hats off to both teams. Coach Alfred McNair, you know, really had a good plan, you know, well-balanced attack. It's just unfortunate that the quarterback, Noah Johnson, got a little bit of a injury that, you know, kind of, hampered him and the things that they needed to do to pull the game out. But, you know, and that's typical. The game was typical of Alcorn. They never give up. Ever since I've known Alcorn football, I mean, they're going to play you. I mean, you're going to have to win the game. They're not going to give it to you. That was the case, and A&T was up to the challenge.
Well, absolutely. But my thinking was on this. If you know that the returner has returned three previous kicks for touchdowns, what would be the rationale for you kicking the ball to him?
He hasn't returned three against me.
That kind of bravado is will get you crushed. You know, that's the kind of thing where you look at directional kicks and special teams scouting, and that was just something that baffled me for a taste there on that. But
how many kicks had he returned in that game? What had he done with those three?
Well, they weren't touchdowns.
I know.
Yeah.
So
you
ask why.
Tim,
you don't play scared.
True. You play to win. I think Alcorn did that. And that was it was good to see, because I think when they went for two pretty early on, that's the mindset. You know, you got to play to try to win this thing.
Exactly.
So it's not a fault. It's not a crash. It's just a matter of, like, you know, if you got somebody that's going to return the ball, it's directional kicks and that kind of thing. And I'm speaking as a special team guy who saw some special team things happen over the weekend. I think, did you see the Seattle game against the 49ers on that kickoff return for a touchdown?
No, I missed that.
Okay, well then you missed the tackling abilities of Sebastian Janikowski of the Seattle Seahawks. So the dude came toward Janikowski, and Janikowski looked like all he wanted to do was just slow him down, because he took a beeline to the sideline as the guy ran past him.
Well, okay.
Hold up.
I am an official card-carrying member of Senior Citizens United. Janikowski is 110 years old.
True.
So, I mean, who...
And has not missed many meals by looking at that jersey.
What 110-year-old man is going to try to make a tackle? I mean, who's in his right mind?
See, there's a caveat, in his right mind. And I think Janikowski saw that when he went past the guy with a meager effort. And that is being charitable, because he made no attempt whatsoever to tackle the guy. Just, I'm going to get in the way, and hopefully somebody's going to catch him from behind. And that
he made a business decision. Do I try to make this tackle and die on the spot? Or do I live to kick another day?
Oh, absolutely. I believe that. I believe his season would have been ended. Because it looked probably
not only his season. Not only his season.
His career?
And maybe his life. I have fallen and I can't get up.
Right. I can't recall them ever, him ever being anything more than a guy that knocks it through there. And he said, that's why I cash my checks kicking. I don't do it tackling. So that was something to be looked at, and it was interesting to see. And also where, you know, repeatedly I listen to the broadcast for ESPN. They generally do a great job. I think they kind of overkill on the histories of fraternities and sororities and the colleges, I think for the most part, the people who are watching the game are folks who know a lot about that. So if it was, you know, maybe it's just me that way. But at the same time, they kept repeatedly calling it the national championship for HBCUs.
Well, you have to understand, you know, what's going on here.
Right.
The game is an ESPN creation. So, that being said, they have to give it as much buzz as possible, and, you know, to create the impression that it is a championship game helps to serve that purpose. I mean, it was a championship game in that the winner was going to be named the national champion, but that was just by happenstance.
Right.
It's not like at the beginning of the season we know that the winner of this game is going to be the national champion. because it can't be a national championship game if all of the teams that are in the running for the national championship aren't eligible to compete in this game, which is the case. So,
well, let me ask you this. How would you do it? You have four conferences, two a Division II, two a FCS. Would you like to see a 14 playoff, or would you want to take the two teams with the best records out of the four and have that be the Celebration Bowl? How would that be determined when you have them, when they're like that? One's Division I, one's D2, for what it's worth.
Well, what you do is you have a Division I championship game and a Division II championship game, and the winners play for the national championship.
Okay.
The champion of the CIAA plays the champion of the SIAC, with the winner playing the winner between the champion of the MEAC versus SWAC game. Now, that will never happen because there are too many moving parts for that to happen. Because as it stands, the SIAC and the CIAA, you know,
participate in the playoffs as well.
Have a championship game and they participate in the playoffs, so that would mean they would have to add another game and forego the playoffs. And the NCAA would have to sanction.
Sign off on it. Yeah.
Yes, sanction the game. But that's the way to do it, really.
Well, I was wondering if you could do it that way, and make it a weekend where you have one night you have the Division II, and the next night you have the Division I, and make it a weekend in Atlanta.
And have a Division I national champion and a Division II national champion.
Right, a Friday night game and a Saturday afternoon game. Do it that way. Or sell it as a package like they do the tournaments.
Okay, you're saying have. So who would be the national champion? You wouldn't have one national champion. You'd have two national champions. Is that what you're saying?
True, yeah. Since let's back it up some. Are the talent levels appreciably different for HBCUs from the upper level to, like, could Tuskegee beat A&T?
Not this year. Tuskegee could hardly beat itself this year. But I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
But I tell you what. A few years back, when Winston-Salem was going good, now that was a legitimate argument.
Mm.
I mean, Winston-Salem was a very strong Division II program. In some years, you know, Tuskegee, it would have been interesting to see how Tuskegee would have fared against some of the upper echelon Division I schools.
Well, I know you guys are so dominant for such a long time that there was talk of you guys. It's, you know, we've done what we can do in the SIAC. We need to go ahead and move to the SWAC or the MEAC.
Well, that sounds good in theory, but in practicality, it's a no-go. It's a non-starter because there's more to it than what goes on the field.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
there are other sports that are involved as well, beyond
other sports,
football and finances.
Facilities. Budgets, recruiting, just a myriad of things that would be involved in order for that to happen. You know.
So we look at Savannah State as a cautionary tale?
Very much so. Very much so. And to me, that was that was just a lark from the beginning because finances aside, just looking purely at football, because football is what pays the freight. They weren't competitive at the Division II level in football. I mean, they haven't had a winning season since, I think, like 1998. Haven't had a winning season this century.
Right.
So, and you're going to move up in class. Even a person of average intelligence would understand that that's not going to work from a competitive standpoint.
So now we've cast aspersions on all people at Savannah. Not having average intelligence.
Well, no, just the ones that signed off on that move.
Okay. Well, yeah, good to that. That's a point taken. That wasn't well thought out, but I haven't even paid attention to it as much this year. But how did Hampton work out this year?
Hampton had a winning record. Were they 6-5, I believe?
Okay.
But they didn't play anybody.
Which is what I'm saying. I depend on, they were invisible because they weren't on the HBCU radar. And certainly there were
people. No.
When
I say they didn't play anybody, I mean they didn't play anybody. What was it? SUNY Maritime.
Yeah.
And a bunch of,
people who need the
games. A bunch of Division II schools. It like I said, they had a winning record, but the level of competition for a Division I school just wasn't there. But
you wonder if they were really happy with this toe dip into this new conference.
Oh, I'm sure they were happy. Because they have to be happy with it, in order to justify it. If you ask anybody associated with Hampton, I'm sure they would tell you that it was, a great move, and that's worked out just the way that we planned it, and there are even better days ahead, and that's what it is. We'll just see how it shakes out going forward.
Well, our fast researcher, our producer Ricky Hampton, has come up and said they finished 7-3 this year. So, they had one game they really would have had somebody's competition was Tennessee State, and that game was postponed because of the hurricane. So, 7-3, out the gate, and pretty much an invisible 7-3.
Yeah, a nondescript 7-3. So, I would like to see, what their attendance was and who the opponents were. And that would tell you a whole lot about what they were doing down there.
Well, speaking of attendance, bouncing back to the Celebration Bowl, this year they saw an uptick in attendance. Hats off to the people that organized the 100 Black Men of Atlanta, 100 Black Men of America, if that's part of it, for putting on a great show. From what I understand, the viewing numbers were down, but from actual attendance there in Atlanta, and it was a pretty bad day for the most part, overcast, the sun came out for maybe 30 seconds, and then it rained some, and so the people came out to support the teams. Alcorn travels well. Kudos to the all the Arkanites. The Braves did really well. Same for the folks, all the Aggies. Thank y'all for coming down. And for anybody who's interested in HBCU sports, like you were saying before, should support these type of games and these type of things because they only help everybody. They just don't just help the participating, the combatants there. They help all the schools that are involved sports.
Hold up a minute. It helps all the schools, right? Not just schools competing, right?
Reputation-wise, yes, it does.
So why don't all the
good game?
So why don't all the schools support it?
That's a good question. Given that this is a destination place, Atlanta.
Yeah. You know, and see, I mean, while 31,000 is a good number,
right?
To me, it's a disappointing number.
True. I know in the glory days of the Circle City Classic, the Hoosier Dome used to be sold out
right.
for those games, and it's over 70,000 people coming to Indianapolis. Okay.
Right.
And,
so why can't you get that for Atlanta, which is a stronghold, you know, for black college football? I mean, Indianapolis, I mean, what's the closest HBCU? Central State?
Yeah, Wilberforce. That's probably it.
Yeah. But it was a magnet. And, all of the HBCUs have strong alumni organizations in Atlanta, in and around Atlanta, you know, within an easy drive of Atlanta. So, to my way of thinking, there's no real reason that that game shouldn't draw 50,000, 60,000.
This is a set-aside game, but do you think the plethora of classics waters down major events like this, where it seems like everybody's got a classic, every state, every city, every team is playing in some classic? The game I didn't understand at all happening for Morehouse. Morehouse played Miles College in Soldier Field, which was – it was well-attended. I think maybe they got 25,000, 30,000 there. But why? Unless, you know, they both have strong alumni associations in the city. But those are the type of places where you really don't think you're going to be – you get a draw. Maybe the trip to Chicago was something people wanted to do. But, a lot of these things happen, like in Mobile and other places that really can't support things.
Well, I mean, I guess it's just the allure of playing in a classic that has caused them to proliferate. To me, a classic is one of two things. It's either a classic matchup or a classic rivalry. Anything beyond that, it's just two teams playing another game. But what they'll do is they're, you know, like Morehouse and Miles, they just took two teams that had a regularly scheduled game
and moved
them. Took them to Chicago, put them in Shell Soldier Field, and increased the ticket price and called it a classic. Now, that's
right.
Okay, because I'm sure the crowd consisted of people from in and around Chicago. So, but what you do in a lot of instances is you deprive your core fan base of an opportunity to see you play.
Right, that was a Morehouse home game that was turned over into a thing in Chicago, and I think Morehouse played at home twice,
so
two or three times a year.
And that happens. I mean, that happens.
Yeah.
If you go down the schedule, any number of teams are only playing two or three home games. So you ask, is it worth it?
Well, if it's successful, I guess. I mean, you can't know that until you play the game. But I know when I was doing the SWAC, Robinson Stadium had just opened up in Grambling. But essentially, they could have kept Saran Wrap on that because every week, Grambling was playing around the country. And a classic. They were in Dallas playing Prairie View. They were at Yankee Stadium playing Morgan State or somebody like that. You know, they were all over the place. And they played maybe a couple of SWAC games, a homecoming, and a couple of the SWAC opponents in a gorgeous stadium that looked like it was brand spanking new. Because of the brand the Grambling is, they were a draw everywhere they went.
Well, see, Grambling is a unique situation. Because Grambling, for whatever reason, draws better in places like Chicago and Detroit and New York and places like that than they actually do at home, except for homecoming. You know, they truly are America's team, and that was by design on Coach Eddie Robinson's part, you know, in cahoots with Colin Nicholson, the PR director.
Yes, I do.
Their philosophy was the stadiums of the world are Grambling's home, and they really meant that. You know, they played in Tokyo, first team to play outside of the continental United States. I mean, they were just all over the place, and that is what made Grambling Grambling. You know, there was and still is this mystique about Grambling football. And
it really doesn't have to be represented as a product. It's just the brand is so strong.
Right, right. And in some ways, that may have trickled down to black college football in general, and that's part of the reason you have these classics that aren't really classics, that are, you know, classic mismatches or whatever you want to call them. You know, to me, a classic game should be something special about it. You know, like the Bayou Classic. You know,
right?
You know, I get it. Grambling and Southern, the Magic City Classic, Alabama State, Alabama A&M.
And one day, I think they've watered down. What used to be, I used to go to Shreveport the first part of the year, and Alcorn would play Grambling with the Red River Classic.
Right, Red River Classic. Right, right, right.
You know, there was some big games
Jackson
like that.
Jackson State,
Tennessee State. Yeah.
That's a natural rivalry. Yeah, that's a natural rivalry. You know, Tuskegee, Alabama State, games like that. You know, that should be played. You know, even in the old days, the Atlanta Football Classic. You know, Tennessee State and Florida A&M. You know, they're big time rivals. Southern and Florida A&M. That's another big time rivalry, a classic matchup of traditional powerhouses. But you know, I mean, you take Tuskegee, you know, the Whitewater Classic played in Phoenix City at a high school stadium.
Come right.
On, give me a break. You know, either school would draw more playing that game on its campus than it does playing in Phoenix City. But in each school,
what was attendance there? Because I was thinking, someone told me, I read this, said they had like 15,000 there, and would they have had 15,000 at
sure,
either
I'm sure,
of the campus?
I'm sure they would. And I don't know that they had 15,000 at Phoenix City. I mean, does Carrot Stadium seat 15,000?
No, I don't think it does.
I think 10
is tops.
I think 10 is generous.
Right.
So, you know, so why?
I guess it's the exposure. Because opportunity to give another classic.
I mean, exposure to what? Exposure to what? I mean, you're not on TV for the most part. It's not no national televised game. And
it's just
you know, you're not exposing your team to a new market because both teams play games
relatively close.
In Columbus later in the year, which is right across the river. So I mean, I don't get it. But you know, hey,
it's a wrap on HBCU football now, and that's pretty much now the off season coming up. It's going to be coaching changes. It's going to be people making moves. I understand in the MEAC offensive lineman is Nick Leverett. Leverett, yes. He's leaving North Carolina Central to go to Rice to follow his former coach, who was at North Carolina Central. Pardon me?
Yeah. That's an real interesting move.
Right.
That's a very interesting move.
And that, to me, given the status of Rice's football program, which hasn't been the strongest over the years, it's pretty much a lateral move.
No.
Oh, you still think it's a step up?
Yeah, because it's FBS. And not so much who he's playing for, but who he'll be playing against.
True. Because I think the Southern Miss Conference, is that when they're in that group with Houston and Southern Miss, and is that that those are the same folks?
Conference USA?
American Conference, or the AAC?
AAC, All-American.
Yeah, with Orlando and that kind of with the UCF, the group.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, that's a step up. I mean, even though it's not upper echelon, it's not one of the super conferences, but it gives him some exposure that he wouldn't get at North Carolina Central. But he's already graduated.
So it's a graduate assistant type thing.
Right, graduate, yeah. But he's an interesting kid. He's on the All-State good works team, for his community service efforts. He's real big in community service.
Well, that's good to see a brother this well-rounded. This football is not all-consuming for him.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about people moving on, and he's graduated and doing a graduate thing. You see, over the weekend, Jalen Hurts graduated from the University of Alabama. And I understand that he got the loudest ovation at graduation, a standing ovation. And as a guy who stuck around with the program and he pretty much saved their season against Georgia, for what it's worth.
He did
not so much save the season. Georgia won, Alabama still would have been one of the top four schools. But nonetheless,
but
they won the SEC championship with her.
But it would have had a different
stuck
feel.
Around.
It would have had a different feel to it. It would have had a different feel to it had they gone into the playoffs,
With a loss.
With the loss and not as conference champions. I think some of that air of invincibility would have been eroded had they
True.
Not won that game.
Yeah, so, going in with one loss, having won 12 and then losing the last game you played wouldn't have been something that they would have been looking favorably on.
Now, people look at them, and wonder, what is it going to take to beat these people? And you get that sense that no matter what we do, it's just not enough because they're going to find a way to win the game.
Oh. Well, in that, it hurt stuck around. The big news out here in the state of Georgia was the young man Fields, second-string quarterback, freshman quarterback here in Georgia, is putting himself out there. He's going to transfer. So Justin Fields is looking to leave Georgia. And it just surprised me, number one, he even signed in the first place, given that Jake Fromm, as a sophomore, was coming back, and he was entrenched as a starter. He led the team to the national championship game, and he wasn't going to get the playing time that he wanted, because I think a couple of this where – he didn't play at all against Florida in a win there. He didn't see the field against Alabama except on that 4th-and-11 craziness. So he played very sporadically, I guess trying to appease him, but, it didn't work out for him like that. So he's in the other teams can officially talk to him. I think he still is on Georgia's roster, and actually has even said he wants to play in the Sugar Bowl when they play Texas on New Year's Day. So what do you think of that situation, Will?
Well, you know, I have a lot of thoughts about that. First of all, if I'm Georgia, why would I let him play in the Sugar Bowl if he's leaving? I use this time, you know, to look at somebody who's going to be there next year.
Mm.
That's the first thing from Georgia's perspective. And from his perspective, what did he have on his mind when he signed with Georgia?
I guess he thought he could push him, push the other guy. And, you know, these coaches have said you're doing good, saying, you know, we want kids to compete for the job.
Well,
that really wasn't
the
competition.
They want them to compete. Yeah, right. But did anybody really think that Jake Fromm was not going to be the starting quarterback?
Probably his parents and him.
And what made them? What? You know. My new favorite quote comes from Eddie Payton, who once said that sometimes people's knowledge exceed their education.
Mm.
They should have known better.
True.
They should have known better. I mean, you know, coaches are great, you know, wonderful people, but they'll tell you anything.
Yeah, to get you in the fold.
They'll tell you.
As it is, today Georgia signed another brother as a quarterback who was he flipped from Ohio State to Georgia, and the rumor is that Fields is looking to be the guy at Ohio State now. So it seems like it's a trade and that kind of thing. as it is, today was early signing day. And I think they say, as it is ranked right now, Alabama has the number one class. Georgia's behind number two, and Georgia supposedly signed the number one kid in the nation, a defensive player. These things don't even bear out till 3 or 4 years down the road.
Yeah,
it's
know,
just what they look like right now.
I don't follow recruiting. You know, because half of these kids
wash out
in 2 years. You know, you won't even know their names. And, you know, kids that get no mention during this period will be the stars. You know, it's just it just adds to the hype of college football. And you know, and When these kids, you know, don't pan out, how much is made of that? You know,
nowhere but probably those kids' hometown papers when they get ready to transfer to somewhere else.
But what about the ones who don't even transfer, who just don't drop out of sight?
I don't understand. I look at Alabama's roster up and down, and I bet you it's laden with nothing but 4 and 5 star athletes, and some kids who are hot shots never see the field at Alabama. Maybe they're great practice players, but you know that they don't have any 1 stars and 2 stars. They got these kids who are elite prospects that are sitting the bench, and they've been told that you're going to get your chance here at Alabama, and it doesn't necessarily happen for everybody. Tua was in a great situation. I saw the game we played against Vanderbilt last season, and I thought then, I said, this guy here is special. But Hurts was playing. And I don't see, you know, that. But whatever they told him to keep him satisfied worked out well for everybody.
Yeah, well, that still was I don't even know how to describe that move. I mean, you know, to sit a guy who's 26 and 2.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unheard of. And what's equally as baffling is that, okay, in the championship, in the SEC championship game against Georgia, Tua was probably playing as poorly as Hurts played in the national championship game.
Absolutely. It was like reversal.
And Saban wasn't about to yank him. And had he not been injured as badly as he was injured,
he would have still been playing.
And Alabama would have lost. So it's kind of like Alabama won that one in spite of Saban.
That's true. But then what about, you think about all these recruiting things and what coaches see in a kid and how they make misses. And I think back to Mark Richt, I think, in Georgia. He had a chance to get really two good quarterbacks. Georgia went through a quarterback drought until they got Eason and Fromm. They had one guy that they had pegged, who was a high school quarterback, they had pegged to come to Georgia to play tight end. That was Cam Newton. And I think they had Deshaun Watson pegged, not as a quarterback for Georgia, but to come in as a defensive back, if I'm not mistaken on those two. That would have kind of, I think those things probably would have ended the quarterback drought at Georgia had they gotten Cam to come to Georgia and gotten Deshaun Watson to come to Georgia as opposed to going to Clemson and Auburn.
Well, you know, maybe Georgia didn't, the ante wasn't enough to get Cam, I don't know.
And see, you sound to other people.
I'm just
What's
saying.
What's this ante business?
I'm just saying.
Okay. All right. Speaking of Cam and things, I understand that going over to the NFL, he is going to miss the rest of the season or at least the next game because of shoulder injuries. And, okay, so I feel like I owe an apology because I know I was dogging him from Monday night because he threw some passes Monday night that were just incomprehensible.
But did
I mean,
you see
throwing
his,
him into
did
the,
you,
into
did
the
you
ground.
See his throwing, did you see his throwing motion?
Right, right. And I
it
thought
was
that was just his motion. I didn't know it had anything to do with a bad shoulder.
It was ugly. But, you know,
I understand. He may have to have it operated on for the second time in 3 years, which is a kind of a red flag for somebody who you just invested millions in with a new contract.
But, see, that's what I don't understand about the Panthers and how they used Cam. As much as he ran the ball and the hits that he took, it was inevitable that he would be injured.
Well, see, Monday night was an exception against the Saints because I was livid because he stayed in the pocket all night. As opposed to running, because there was he had opportunities to run for first downs and extend plays and that kind of stuff, but he stayed in the pocket and got hit for sacks. And I'm going, okay, what has happened to this guy? What's his problem?
Well, a bad shoulder will make you do that.
Yeah, but that wasn't, you know, because that wasn't public knowledge until today when Ron Rivera comes to the press conference and says that they're going to sit him out to against the Falcons this week and maybe the season will end. Well, I think what they play at New Orleans.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this affects him going forward in terms of, you know, his willingness, you know, to run the ball and play a physical style of game. Or will he make an adjustment to how he plays and become more of the classic, you know, prototypical quarterback?
I will. That's on him totally. It's not on how the team, what the team said.
That's on him. That's on him.
Because
that's on him.
He made, just before the half, they needed to score. And so he runs for a first down. He's so busy getting up to do his first down thing that he burned off 15 seconds clowning and then throws the interception to stop a scoring drive. And he did some other stuff that during the game that didn't, for a person who's been in the league with almost 10 years now, is it? That he still has immature behavior as a quarterback really is, you know, you have to think about it. You guys need to be looking towards your future and maybe somebody else.
You said it. I didn't.
McCaffrey was totally put out as the microphones caught him at the end of the game for frustrating with how he went out those four passes. I mean, my goodness, he had such opportunities to run. They didn't hem him up. They were downfield. They didn't rush three people. So,
To be honest, I've never been a big Cam Newton fan. I just never liked his style, even though he was successful, won an MVP, and I didn't like his demeanor, you know.
Right.
That just didn't do it for me.
He's always rubbed me the wrong way, but then I get up here. I'm not in love with any quarterback in the NFC South. Drew Brees is one of the greatest guys in the history of football, but he is the enemy. Brees, Winston, or Newton. I wish them nothing but bad luck, especially two times a year when they play in my team. So, but saying that though, there's more. They're talent rich, except for Winston. You know, he's got $1 million talent, but like a 20-cent brain, because he can't get out of his own way.
I really root for Winston. I would love to see him turn around. You know, because he has, so much talent, and it's a shame.
Yeah, absolutely.
To squander it. It's a shame to squander it. But I don't know if he can turn around, which is unfortunate. You know, and thinking about that thing, you know, in the old days, he would be the classic Raiders quarterback.
You know,
the renegade Raiders, you know, taking
he's
a
like
bunch
a Ken
of cast
Stabler
outs.
Type?
No, just a bunch of cast offs.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, there's a bunch of misfits. All those cats, you know,
exactly.
They were just
exactly. He would fit in nicely with the old Raiders, but there are no teams like that in the NFL anymore.
Well, he would almost fit in with the new Raiders because they were looking for a quarterback. But you know who they signed today? Nathan Peterman. He is late of Buffalo.
Nate the Great.
Nathan Peterman. And yet again, Colin Kaepernick sits at home. I think he's won more playoff games than Peterman. He's probably won more regular season games than Peterman. And right now, sitting at home, he's thrown less interceptions than Peterson. That guy was horrible at Buffalo. But
he probably won more playoff games than Peterman won regular season games.
Right. He was dreadful enough that Buffalo let him go, and he was sitting at home. These cats in the past couple of weeks that have gotten signed, Savage in Cincinnati, Johnson and the Redskins, although he's won a game, he had a guy came through for Washington last week, and then
well,
you get Peterman coming
that's
up
that's
in the backup.
That's all part of the conspiracy here in Washington. You know, everything in Washington is a conspiracy. And the conspiracy is, you know, to keep Jay Gruden in a job. You know, they'll look at, wow, he did a great job with a Patrick Mahomes, four-string quarterback. You know, just, you know, imagine what he could have done had the team been healthy the whole season and blah, blah, blah.
If Smith had not been lost for the season, they probably would have had a better chance at winning the division. It was a weak division this year. Eagles weren't that good, haven't been that good. The Cowboys aren't that good, but they're going to make the playoffs, which is, you know, unreal to me.
That's not written either.
You don't think?
I'm just saying. You know,
it's not written.
When you get shut out at this point in the season, you can't take it.
At Indianapolis,
ain't nothing guaranteed.
And so this weekend, both the Giants and the Cowboys are shut out on the same day. for the first time in the history of the league, which says a lot. It says a lot about Eli probably having to hit the road up there in New York. And nobody's heads are going to roll in Dallas. It just seems like they had a bad day.
Well, in New York, if Eli hits the road, he needs to take a lot of people with him. I mean, okay, yeah, he's been wretched. But, you know, I still point to his offensive line.
Well, yeah, he's gun shy. He got sacked on a game earlier this year. I saw.
Do you blame
with
him?
The, huh?
Do you really blame
him?
Oh,
no, I don't.
He gets
hit all the time. Somebody tapped his shoe on a sack, and he fell down like he got shot, you know, from the book depository.
When those guys hit you, it hurts. And,
oh, yeah.
And Thomas Brady has made a career of going down when somebody, you know, breathes hard on him, you know. So
I don't ever really hit throughout his career. That dude has never really had pressure put on him, Brady. His offensive line has been really solid throughout this career.
It has been, but on those rare occasions when, up until this year, you know, it was a rare occasion when somebody did pressure him when they got close
right.
to him, he would fold like a tent.
True. Yeah, he does. He does. And the game I watched this past weekend was such an occasion where he was throwing that ball, he threw to Gronkowski over on the sideline, saying he was trying to throw it away. No, not good. Not good at all.
Well, no, what happened was he didn't have the arm strength to get it there. You know, because he was under pressure and he was throwing off his back foot, and he just didn't have the strength to get it there. You know, age.
Oh, my goodness.
Age robs you.
You mentioned arm strength. Is that necessary anymore?
Yeah, to get the ball to certain points. And it was necessary on that play.
Oh, yeah,
I'll put it this way. Arm strength isn't necessary until it's necessary. And that's one case when it was necessary. And it just, it made him look old.
Yeah, the whole game made him look old. But every time you talk about him getting old, somehow he was revived in some way with a good game, a follow-up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's frustrating, too. It's either got the next week out guy, except for I think they lost back-to-back weeks, right?
Right.
It's been a while since that happened.
Right. But, you know, he may find a way. But for the time, it's waiting around the corner for him.
Oh, no, he's going to play as long as he want to play. There's nobody. Who's behind him? Nobody.
He may play. He may play, but at what level? At what level would he play? You know, for the time, doesn't have to knock you out.
It just has to slow you up.
For the time will, you know, make you punch drunk. You know, you'll be, you know, out on your feet, you know.
You know what you were talking about is not written. What's the Cowboys, a game ahead of the Redskins? The Cowboys they host Tampa this week. Washington they're at Tennessee. So do you think that's going to make a big difference there? Do you think that they're going to be able to keep him at arm's length going into that final week of the season?
But Philly ain't dead.
Yeah.
So who do the Cowboys have next week?
Let's see. You said Philly's not dead. Yeah, they have Tampa this week, and I think they got a division game the next week. Let me make sure of that.
And see, what you have to understand is it's great theater in Philly. Nick Foles rescues the Eagles yet again.
Oh, that gets old. That gets real old. Cowboys are at the Giants to end their season.
Oh. I mean, there you have it. There you have it.
What, the Eagles
knock off the Skins because the Skins are going to lose. The Skins are going to lose to Tennessee.
Okay, Skins lose to Tennessee, and then the Eagles play at Washington to end the season.
And Philly beats the Skins. Giants beat the Cowboys. Philly. Fly, Eagles, fly. Up to the sky.
Oh,
Nick
no.
Foles. Nick Foles is the
not
Eagle
having
again.
That. Well, yeah.
You heard it here first.
I can't see them doing that. That would
okay.
be
you want to borrow
the
my
mother
glasses?
Of all
you
mother of all
glasses?
Comebacks.
You want to borrow my glasses?
Go with it. Yeah. That's the mother of all comebacks right there. And see with the Saints now pretty much in the driver's seat for having the number one seed in the conference. Because I think the Rams close out at the 49ers. Assume they host the 49ers, they close it out like that. And so that's kind of pretty much a walkover.
So you're saying that the Saints are going to walk over the Steelers?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I just think that if you guys, you know, you're playing in New Orleans, you beat them, and then you're tied with the Rams, but the Rams have an easy game the next week. So because you got them, and it's Carolina's playing at New Orleans, and then the Rams, they have a soft game on their last game of the season.
Okay.
I'm just saying, 49ers is somebody they're not going to have to worry about.
The Seahawks didn't have to worry about them either, did they?
Yeah. Again, they lost. I forget what the score was, but that was on Sebastian Janikowski and his no-tackle itself on that kickoff return.
I think they lost by 3.
Yeah, that was 7. So that's what I'm saying. Had he made any effort, he could have tripped, stuck his leg out to try to trip him. It's a 15-yard penalty, but he's not scoring. And you don't know what could have happened on the drive.
Yeah. And that's why they call it football.
Well, I don't know if he was playing. Those are big headlines in the NFL, which you get the Panthers and Cam, Peterman signing with the Raiders. Which is something that just kind of again blows your mind when you think about collusion and the possibilities of legal action that people will be dealing with here.
Well, let's give the Raiders the benefit of the doubt and say that they were
they did their due diligence.
No, they were in the spirit of Christmas and spreading a little cheer to the Peterman household by giving him a paycheck.
Now, you would not think that would be the big deal.
Because it couldn't have been anything based on solid football.